We're here.
We're back.
Hello.
After a little holiday hiatus.
We love a holiday hiatus. We all need a little rest. It
was a well-deserved break. So Julie and I are sitting here in our official Miss Murder sweatshirts, drinking from our official Miss Murder coffee mugs.
Woo woo! Because we're branding and all that good shit.
And a lot of people, by a lot, I mean 11, but 11 people were interested in merchandise on our Instagram poll.
Yeah, and I got my sister... I got her one of the sweatshirts, and my dad is like, I listen to every episode. Where's my sweatshirt?
And my mom's like, you know, your uncle wants the sweatshirt. And I was like, oh, okay.
We love to see the support
from
our friends and family.
And we hit a milestone on our streams.
Ooh, do tell.
1,000. We hit
snap.
The 1,000 mark. On Anchor for streams. So, yay!
That is so cool. Thank you, guys. Yeah, we hope you had Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, all of that.
Wonderful festive seasons.
I hope family dinners weren't extremely turbulent this year. Or if you spent time by yourself because it's a pandemic, you know?
Join some downtime.
Enjoy some downtime. Watch some Netflix.
Oh, yeah. I love alone time.
Love it.
It's so, so refreshing. Just.
Oh, yes.
No responsibilities.
Oh, yes. It's very nice. So I definitely had a good little break. And
yes.
Kat definitely had more of a turbulent.
Yeah.
tell the people.
Let me tell the people what happened. Okay. I finished all my finals. That was great. Ended with an A. And then, work a few more hours at my job because it's the holidays. They know I'm out of school. So, just come in a little extra this week. So I worked Christmas Eve. And we had a reporting of a shooter. Apparently there were over 10 separate 911 calls saying shots had been fired in the mall. So nobody was hurt. Let me just put that out there. Nobody was hurt. Everyone was safely evacuated. But it was pretty freaking scary because as I'm getting, to the exit, a cop with an AK-47 is telling us to get out.
Yeah.
And then
it was chaos.
It was. And so we're standing at the entrance, not knowing what's happening. And then another cop runs in and he falls and people started screaming because it was raining. So he slipped because of the rain and people screamed because they thought he had been shot.
Oh, my God. And this was on Christmas Eve.
On Christmas Eve. It was a pretty it was literally not even a bad day. You have last minute shoppers, but it wasn't anything insane.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden I hear this rumbling noise and I'm like, that doesn't sound like our carts. And it was people running.
Stampeding into the store.
Literally stampeding in. Yeah. And
so clearly Charlotte is which is where we're from. If we hadn't already told you that, maybe. I feel like we have.
We probably have, yeah.
But yeah, if you're not familiar with Charlotte, we promise you it's a good place.
It is.
Even though this is the second year in a row with a false mall shooting report. Literally same thing happened last year, but on Black Friday.
Yeah. And
at
then
the same
there was
mall.
A woman was literally screaming in my face that I needed to hide. And I was trying to tell her, no, our security team, the mall security team, it's a false alarm. Nothing happened. I like she was hysterical. So oh my. That was
oh my.
Definitely scary.
Yeah, so you know, we hope this doesn't deter you from visiting Charlotte. We have many great attributes.
Yeah, although my case this week is not one of those great attributes.
Yeah. Yeah, so if that false mall shooting story wasn't enough to scare you away from Charlotte forever, I'm sure that Kat's case today will definitely do that. So.
Oh, yes. Because today, a couple, when I say a couple, I mean exactly two people guessed it right when I posted the photo on our Instagram of the 90s interior of Taco Bell. Mm-hmm. Because today I will be talking about the Taco Bell Strangler.
Yes, Andy knew the case as well, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What were his
Pretty
thoughts?
Excited. He was what?
What were his thoughts? Just like, oh yeah, that guy.
Well, I don't want to spoil things before you get into it.
Oh, yes.
I don't want to ruin things.
We will debrief yeah. afterwards.
Oh, yes. But before we get started, I want to give a shout out to my sister, who literally it says that she's our number one fan.
I believe
which
it. Rafi, you I are believe officially it. Our number one fan.
Rafi is officially our number one fan, president of the Miss Murder fan club. So for Christmas, Kat and I were planning on making our Miss Murder merch, kind of our first stab at it. And I was like, well, let me get my sister a sweatshirt. And then that way she feels like special because, you know, she's very loyally listening to all of our episodes. And then we're opening Christmas presents and she hands me this big bag with like four black t-shirts in it. And I was like, what the hell is this? And she made us some fan merch.
She did.
So she made us some cool t-shirts for Kat, myself, and yes. herself that have that say M is for Miss Murder Podcast, you know, shout out to our ABCs. And on the back, it was our logo in Andy Warhol style, like pop art.
Colors.
Yes, it was chef's it's kiss.
So I will post a picture for our yes. number one fan.
Right.
And her wonderful hard work.
Yes, we meant to take cute pictures of us in our new merch to post onto our social media so
reveal
that you guys can get to see us, get to know us, the faces behind the spooky
fucked up shit we talk about on this show.
Yes, but unfortunately this weekend was just, you know, full of family things, and obviously we're trying to be safe because of COVID, so we didn't
yeah.
get to do that, but
it was just
we
like,
will
hey,
do it
hey
we will
here's your gift
yeah
Thanks.
We saw each other for 30 minutes at max
yeah
yeah so hopefully we can, you know, snap some pics soon.
Yes, but I did tag our podcast in my picture that I posted the other day of me wearing
yeah.
t-shirts, because we did t-shirts, sweatshirts, and mugs for each other.
Yeah.
So my face is on there on the tag. I don't know if Julie wants to.
Oh yeah, I will prepare this face because right now, I woke up and haven't moved from the couch. So.
And then we can just like post them in an official welcome.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I love that. Okay.
So cute.
And then also before we dive into the case, tell us about our socials, Kat.
Well, if you would like to see the wonderful 90s interior of Taco Bell, which they probably should have kept because that shit was
they
rad.
They should have.
It was
amazing.
It was the aesthetic of the 90s white paper cup with the blue wave, but cooler, if that's possible.
Yes.
Because they kept those cups at coolers. Ha, ha, ha. Ha, 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 ha.
I hate you. I hate you.
So you can give us a follow at ms.murder_podcast. And we are also on Facebook.
Facebook.
I feel like Moira would follow us.
Moira would definitely follow us.
And Miss would Murder. Like, that was a terrible impression.
No, I thought, but I mean, it's better than anything I could ever
disgruntled
do.
Disgruntled Pelican. That's better.
Much excellent.
Moira would follow us.
She would.
So you should follow us. So now I guess we shall jump in
Let's
to
jump
the case
in.
of Henry. Okay, I'm stupid. Let me just say that. So I don't know if it's Louis or Lewis.
Is there a U in it?
There is. Louis.
That's Louis, right? Well, I guess St. Louis is spelled.
Right. You under. You see, I see in
I
your
see
face,
your
you
dilemma.
Understand
I
my,
do.
My dilemma here.
I see
of,
it. I
am
see it.
Do I speak English?
I mean, English is a weird language.
It is.
Who knows how things are pronounced?
I think people just kind of guess and then they make it mainstream.
Yeah.
That's
so,
exactly
you know
what?
Happens. Just go with whatever's in your heart and,
so,
you know, we'll just go with that. I love
I'm
that.
I'm just going to say Henry Louis Wallace. Or no, Henry Louis Wallace, I think sounds. But he doesn't
Excellent.
Deserve a good pronunciation of his name. So we're just going to call this fucker Henry.
Oh, well, fuck you, Henry.
Yeah, fucking Henry. So he was born November 1965 in Barnwell, South Carolina, which is like at the very southern part of the state because the next closest major city is Augusta, Georgia.
Oh,
so it's just like it's like right there on the border. Yeah.
Right.
And his mother, Lottie May, she was a single mom working at a factory.
Lottie May. Love it.
Oh, we don't love her. She's pretty fucked. So the family growing up was extremely poor. She was a single mom. And she worked in like a factory, like making socks, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they were so poor that Henry would have to wear the hand-me-downs from his older sister.
Oh.
Yeah. And his mother was also extremely strict. And apparently there was a lot of like physical and emotional abuse. Oh. And when she used physical discipline, she would send the kids out to pull a switch from the yard. And if she was too tired, she would have the siblings beat each other.
What the fuck? This is like Gertrude Banachevsky, but like worse.
Yes.
Maybe.
I mean,
just as bad.
It definitely
insane.
Like scarred him for life because that will become evident in the crimes.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
she doesn't really take responsibility for what she did as a mother. Yeah.
She probably thinks it was justified because that's just the times.
It was the times. So he attended Barnwell High School, and despite all the abuse, he seemed kind of like okay, and he was one of the more like popular kids, like everybody knew him, and they seemed pretty cool with him. His mom wouldn't let him play football, so he became a cheerleader. Which,
why not?
That, for the time, like late 70s, early 80s, male cheerleaders weren't really a thing.
That did not happen.
But, I mean, despite that, he was, like, people still liked him. Like,
you know, and honestly,
did,
I can't
okay.
even blame Lottie Mae because I don't want to have children. But if I had a son, I legit would not let him play football over my dead body. No, sir. Go do the
very
splits.
Very dangerous sport. That's the doggo.
Tis my doggo hearing noises outside and deciding he wants to say hello.
Hello, little Sirius.
Hello, Sirius.
Would you like to talk about the Taco Bell Strangler?
Tell us your thoughts. He is sniffing the mic. Can you hear it?
He just like put his head on top of the mic.
Could you hear him sniffing? No?
I don't know. Maybe.
Sirius, come and sniff.
Okay.
He's just laying his head.
He just
here.
Put his head on her arm.
Motherfucker just wants attention.
He does. He wants his mommy.
He is his mother's child.
Yes.
Always seeking attention.
So,
anyway.
Yes. So Henry was also elected to the student council. So, I mean, I think this was
that's
the
ultimate popularity contest high school.
Yeah. He peaked in high school.
Oh, damn.
Let me just say that, yeah. So
to all you motherfuckers out there, no, I'm just kidding. No, just kidding. Don't become like him.
Oh, no, no. Although it is evident they peaked in high school.
Oh. So shout out to all of the nerdy kids out there. Don't peak in high school. Keep with it. Keep Don't with become it. The Taco Bell strangler.
So he graduated high school in 1983, and he started working as like a DJ or a disc jockey, as they were referred to.
Disc jockey, bringing the funky jams.
The funky jams of the jockey for the discs.
Love it.
And he did try to, I think he did enroll in college, and it just, college just was not, it just wasn't for him. So he stuck with the DJing, but he got fired because he would steal CDs.
Oh, no.
So the one thing he had going for him, he just kind of ruined.
Fucked it up.
He fucked it up, man. So 2 years after he graduated in 1985, he joined the Navy. And he was like the absolute perfect serviceman kind of behavior. I don't know. When I was reading it, I kind of thought of like Forrest Gump when he's in the military and they tell him to do something and he does it like flawlessly in record time. That's right. I mean, that's pretty much how this guy was.
I mean, seeing how he was raised, like the very strict upbringing, it only makes sense that
he's told what to do. He does it.
Right. So takes authority figures very seriously.
And this is where his criminal behavior started to come in.
Oh,
because,
shit.
As we're familiar, during the 1980s, the crack cocaine blow up happened. So he started breaking into homes, breaking into businesses to steal money to buy drugs. And so he was stationed in Washington for his being in the Navy. And he started doing this all throughout Seattle. There was a warrant out for his arrest, and then there was another warrant because he broke into a hardware store. And for breaking into the hardware store, he pled guilty and was sentenced to 2 years probation. But he never attended the meetings, you know, because you have your mandatory meetings with your officers, and he like never went to them.
So was he kicked out of the Navy then?
I'll get to there. Because, I mean, I guess because of the time, they wouldn't really know these things were happening.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So even despite these warrants and being on probation, he was still B&E-ing, stealing shit. He broke into his old high school and stole stuff. He also broke into the old radio station he worked at. So in 1987, he married his high school sweetheart, Moretta Brabham, and that was just, you know, like, now we're married. So now in 1990, Henry is like 24, 25 years old. And in his neighborhood, his mother was friends with a coworker who like lived in the same neighborhood. They were really good friends. So that's how Henry met Tashonda Bethea.
Okay.
So when Henry was 24, 25, Tashonda was only 18 years old and a senior in high school.
Oh.
And he had a crush on her.
Oh, so he was one of those.
Yeah.
One of those guys that graduates high school and then comes back to prey on the young.
You know? Oh, exactly. My. So, yikes. And I mean, they had known each other, I guess, for like a few years because their moms were friends. So in March of 1990, Tashonda disappears and no one knows where she is. And there was a lake in the area. And 1 month later, two fishermen pulled out Tashonda's body from the lake. And yikes. The police, they're like, they had Henry in their sights. They were like, this guy, our suspicions are on him. They questioned him, but there was no solid evidence connecting him to her disappearance and her death. And they also questioned him because they thought that he had something to do with the rape of a 16-year-old girl in the area. But again, there wasn't any evidence to connect him to that. So they couldn't charge him on either crime.
Oh, wow.
So in 1992, that's when he was finally discharged from the Navy. But he had like such a perfect record of service that they gave him an honorable discharge despite all of his criminal activity.
Literally, how it doesn't matter how good of a serviceman you were, you were breaking and entering and thieving and being a suspect for murder and rape. Yep. Doesn't matter how good your service record was. You're a shitty person. That's not honorable.
It's no. Because they finally caught wind of, oh, there were warrants out for him breaking and entering. That's not good. So
that's not good.
That's not good, is it?
I'm shook.
So this is when his marriage to his high school sweetheart falls apart. So he decides, okay, I'm just going to move to Charlotte and get a fresh start.
No.
And he bounced around between jobs until he landed at the Taco Bell on North Sharon Amity Road. And the reason he's called the Taco Bell Strangler is because all of his victims were connected to that Taco Bell or by the surrounding businesses. So Taco Bell was like his base for going out and finding victims.
Okay.
Yeah.
Damn, so, that is not a good look for Taco Bell.
I
have had many a wonderful conversations in a Taco Bell parking lot at 4 a.m. I could have been snatched. People could have.
Good thing we weren't alive,
but that's what I'm saying. Taco Bell parking lot at 4 a.m. It's the spot.
It is. So,
but perhaps not.
So all of the victim profiles, shout out to the murder squad, because that was the only source I could find that like detailed the victims. Mm-hmm. So most of the information here is from them. They also have an episode on this, so check out the murder squad. But I also think that because it wasn't until after I did all this that I found a court document from the NC Supreme Court that goes into details of like graphic details about what he did to the victims. So I think they read that and summarized that, and then I summarized what they wrote. So I will also post links to the murder squad descriptions and the court document. The court document is super long, but it's incredibly graphic. So keep that in mind.
And you are summarizing the summary that the...
Yes.
Yes.
Because I couldn't find any other information, and it wasn't until after I had read all their stuff that I found the court document, because that's who I am.
I understand.
So our first victim, Caroline Love, she was 21 years old, and she worked at Bojangles on Central Avenue. And on June 15th, 1991... she got off work and she walked home, which was normal routine. And her cousin actually ran into her on her walk home, and he offered to give her a ride, but she was like, no, I'm good. And her cousin said that he saw her actually get inside her apartment. You know, because good friends always make sure you are in your home with the door closed and locked afterwards. Yes.
Absolutely. And what time did she get off work? Did it say?
It sounded like it was in the evening. Okay. But a couple days went by. No one had seen her. No one had heard from her. And that's when her roommate and her sister filed a missing persons report.
Ooh.
It wasn't until March of 1993 that her body was discovered in some woods, and her cause of death was strangulation.
Oof.
Victim number two. Her name was Shauna Hawk. She was 20 years old and living with her mom while she studied to be a paralegal at, oh my God, I forgot what the abbreviation for CPCC was.
You mean CPCC?
Yeah. I was like, wait, what does CPCC stand for again? Central Piedmont Community College.
Yes.
I literally could not remember what that stood for. Okay. But yes, She attended CPCC, studying to be a paralegal, and living with her mom. So she worked at Taco Bell, and one of her coworkers was Henry.
Interesting.
So February 19th, 1993, about a month before Caroline Love's body was discovered, right, Sharon's mom came home from work. She saw that Shauna's car wasn't in the driveway. Wasn't too alarming. So she goes inside the house and starts making dinner, normal routine. And that's when she notices that Shauna's coat and her purse were inside the house.
Oh.
And so this raised...
normally go places without that stuff.
Yes, because her mom said that she always had her purse on her. So that was a red flag. And it was also a really cold day, and she was wearing that jacket earlier. Like, in, I guess in the morning before they left, like, she saw her wearing that jacket.
Right. February is cold.
Yeah, a really cold day in Charlotte. It's like 40 degrees.
You know, we're in the Sun Belt, but... It still gets cold. It still gets nippy.
It's that wind. It's the wind that gets you, bro. It just goes right
that
through you.
That wind chill. Oof.
So after seeing her, Shauna's purse and her coat, she calls Shauna's boyfriend, and he's like, no, she's not with me. I haven't seen her. So they decide, okay, we need to go to the police. Something is not right. So they make the report to the police, and then her boyfriend starts walking around the house, like, being absolutely sure, like, there's no way she's home right now, you know,
right,
because her purse is here, but her car is gone.
Right.
And then he discovered Shauna's body in the bathtub.
Oh, shit.
Yep. It said that, like, her body was, like, submerged in water. And so the family holds a funeral for her. And Henry shows up to the funeral.
Of course he does. Because he just wants to wish his coworker a farewell. Fuck you, Henry.
Fuck this guy. Yeah. And this is, again, the very not graphic, watered down version of what he had done.
How the fuck? I'm sure you... I'm just blown. In her own bathtub.
Yes.
How did he even get in? I'm shook.
Yep. So they think that, like, she let him in because he knew her, or she knew him.
She knew him. Mm-hmm.
And then that's when he killed her and then took her car.
Oh my gosh. Wee woo, wee woo.
Wee woo, wee woo all the way. And our next victim was Audrey Spain. She was 24 years old, and she also worked at Taco Bell with Henry Lewis. And a few months later, June of 1993, Audrey didn't show up for her shift at work. And she was such a good employee that this was so out of character for her that her manager actually drove to her apartment to see if she was okay.
Oh, damn.
So this is a manager that cares.
Right, the manager cares.
He cares about
above and beyond the call of duty.
So,
that's crazy.
He saw that her car was parked, so he's like, okay, that's, her car is there, that is a little weird, so he left her a voicemail, and then she didn't show up for her second shift, and that's when the manager was like, all right, I'm calling 911, something's not right. So the officers went to Audrey's apartment, they knocked on the door, no one answered, and that was it.
That was it. That was their welfare check.
And then 2 days later, maintenance workers for the apartment complex needed to get in her apartment to do maintenance work. And that's when they found her body. She had been strangled, and part of a t-shirt had been stuffed into her mouth.
Holy shit.
And her cause of death was strangulation. So, Valencia Jumper, she was a college senior. She was studying political science. And she worked at Food Lion, which happened to be near the Bojangles, where the first victim, Caroline Love, worked. So, August 9th, 1993, she had made plans with a friend. He was going to come over that night. They were going to hang out. And her friend shows up to her apartment, and he sees all of the smoke coming out of her apartment windows.
Oh, my God.
So, the firefighters, they get into the apartment, and they discovered Valencia's body, which had been burned. And they also found a pot of beans on the stove.
What?
A pot of beans, which was set up to look like the pot of beans started the
fire. Caught on fire, right.
And this is also, like, at midnight. So, I mean, we all have our, you know, Rugrats dad moment of making pudding at 3 a.m. But making beans at midnight?
You know,
that's not
but actually, Brianna, our friend Brianna, would definitely be the person to make beans at midnight.
That's actually very true.
She would make rice and beans at midnight and just eat it straight out of the pot.
That sounds like Brie.
We love you, Brie. And when you hear this, I know she's going to call me very angrily for exposing her like that.
She is.
But damn, yeah. A smart tactic to divert the attention of what really happened.
But what actually happened was that Wallace strangled her and then took a bottle of rum, poured it all over her body, poured it all throughout her bedroom. Then he turned the stove on and put the beans on the burner. And then he started the fire in the bedroom.
So, does he know that the firefighters can tell the point of origin of a fire? Because my guy.
Yeah, and then there's a profile, like a criminal profiler that I'm going to bring up later. And he was like, this dude did not. He said it was basically, you know, because people say 2 steps forward, 1 step back. He was... Right. 1 step forward, 2 steps back.
Yeah. It's that, like, he thought he was doing something smart to get, you know, to deceive the police, but actually...
Yeah, because...
He didn't think things through all the way.
No, because, I mean, they can very clearly tell that where he threw the match, that's going to show the point of origin of the fire. But he wasn't that smart, no.
He's not that smart.
And then, during Valencia's funeral... Henry shows up to pay his respects for the woman that he burned.
Fuck you, Henry. Fuck you.
Fucking Henry. And then Michelle Stinson. She was 20 years old. She was a mom with 2 little boys.
No.
And she had worked at Taco Bell.
No.
So on September 15th, a friend knocked on the door of her apartment to come over. No one answered, but he could hear this noise. And he's like, that's really weird. Like, where is this noise coming from? And he looks, and he sees the 2 little boys hitting on the window, trying to get someone's attention.
No, the poor babies.
So he pretty much bursts into the apartment, and he found Michelle stabbed to death on the kitchen floor. And he picked up her phone to try to call 911, but the phone line had been cut.
Oh.
So these 2 little boys, who they think the older boy saw his mom being murdered.
They saw it. They saw everything.
They were left in the apartment by themselves with their mother's body with no way to call for help.
Holy shit. And does it say if Henry knew that they were there?
I mean,
or did they hide?
It might clear it up on the court document, but I mean he's a fucking psychopath. He
wouldn't have, like, cared either way.
There's one victim on here, and I read on the court document that her son was there. He didn't give a fuck.
Kitties
running in the background. It's
oh my goodness.
Bea and Ginny. They're playing with each other.
Bea and Ginny. They're playing.
They're like little BFFs now. It's so cute.
I love that. Before you continue, I totally forgot to say this a few episodes back when I told Catherine, but I feel like all of my favorite podcasts all have a cat person and a dog person.
Yes.
And it just, like, you need that balance.
And we have that because she's a dog mom. I have a bunch of cats. Like, right now in my camera, you can see Ginny sniffing my laundry.
Yes. So, just fun fact, I noticed that. And we've got the dynamic.
We've got the
cat person, dog person balance. Yes. The ratio.
But this fucking guy.
Yeah, back to this fucking.
He's a fucking monster.
Fuck that guy.
And
fuck Henry.
She had been stabbed in the back 4 times. And she had also been strangled.
That's such overkill.
Yeah. And our next victim, Vanessa Mack, she was 25 years old with 2 daughters. One was 7 years old. The other was 4 months old. Her sister had worked at Taco Bell with Henry. So Vanessa worked at Carolina Medical Center. And she had kind of like a daycare system set up with a woman named Barbara. So every morning at 6 a.m., Barbara would pick up the baby and then Vanessa would go to her job. And that's the dynamic that they had. So February 20th, 1994, Vanessa, you know, she came to the apartment at 6 a.m. ready to take the baby as usual. She knocked on the door. There wasn't an answer, which she thought was really weird because this is something they did regularly.
Right.
But Barbara had a key to the apartment. And when she let herself into the apartment, she noticed that the baby was, like, laid out on the couch by herself. And Barbara was like, okay, no, something is definitely wrong.
That's not right.
You don't, like, this is, Vanessa would never leave the baby on the couch like that without supervision.
Right.
So she went into Vanessa's bedroom and she said the only thing she could see was Vanessa's feet hanging, like dangling off the bed. And she knew that's all she needed to see for her to know that she was dead. So she grabbed the baby, got out of the apartment. It didn't say where the 7-year-old was. But I mean,
she might have already been at school or something.
Yeah, for 6 a.m., like, she probably had her own, like, daycare system set up with her, too. But it was just the baby in the apartment. So when the police came, there was a towel and a T-shirt wrapped together, and that's what we used to strangle her. And she also had a wound on her head because, you know, she was bleeding from her head, so that was probably used to, like, subdue her. But she was strangled with such force that blood was coming from her nose and her ears.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Yeah. And the police, they weren't taking, I mean, these murders happened, but there wasn't really a lot of effort putting in to see if these were all connected These were all young Black women, middle, lower class, socioeconomic background. A lot of them had been strangled and, like, they did not really.
And they're all connected to that same area.
Yeah. Like, the police just, they're like, we don't know. Because I guess what threw them off was, you know, like, the one victim was stabbed. Like, these weren't
the
all
MO
just,
wasn't exactly
yeah,
the same.
They couldn't exactly pinpoint what his profile is and what his killing pattern was because, you know, it involved arson. Another case was strangulation. One victim was stabbed. So he was kind of all over the place. But, I mean, reading these were, like, he was killing mothers. They all had this connection to an area. Like,
all, like, 20, early 20s.
Yeah, like, these were not. And I think his oldest victim, who I'll get to, she was, like, in her 30s, but also, like, there is a connection here, but the police just weren't this. They really messed up by not really looking into what happened. Right. So,
sigh.
Yeah. Betty.
CMPD, what are you doing?
Betty Balcom. Yeah, I think it's Balcom. She was an assistant manager at the Taco Bell where Henry worked. And on March 9th, 1994, like 2 weeks after Vanessa's murder, she didn't show up for her shift. And this was unusual for her. So her coworkers were trying to get in touch with her. But no one answered. Like, there wasn't a response. Mm-hmm. So her manager actually drove to her apartment as well. Another manager that cared about the well-being managers of their employee.
He come through.
Yeah. He knocked on the door. He didn't answer. He started like looking into the windows to see if anything was off, and he couldn't find anything wrong. But he didn't take this, or he, she, whoever this manager was like, no, something's wrong. So they called the police. They weren't going to take, mm-hmm. oh, everything looks normal. She's fine. No, they still called the police. Right. So 1 hour after they filed the report with the police, maintenance workers had to go into Betty's apartment. And that's when she was found strangled with a towel and a pillowcase kind of twisted together.
Similar to the last one.
Similar to the last one. And then Betty's car and several items were missing. So they assumed, oh, this is like a murder robbery. And they did find her car. It was abandoned in a shopping center. But Henry left a handprint on the car.
Oh, snap. Come through forensics.
So March 10th, the very next day, Henry had a friend that lived in the same apartment complex named Vernus Woods. And he knew that Vernus lived in the apartment with his girlfriend, Brandy Henderson, and they had a 10-month-old son.
Oh, my God.
And Henry knew what hours Vernus worked.
Stop
so
it. So. Stop it right now.
He had apparently stopped by the apartment, chit-chatted, and then left. And he knew Vernus left for work at 5 o'clock. So he went to work. He came home at midnight. And he saw that the front door of his apartment was unlocked.
Shut up.
So he opened the door. The living room had been torn apart. And his stereo was missing. Like, his stereo was stolen. So he panicked. So he's running to try to find Brandy and their son. And he found the baby gasping for breath because a pair of shorts were wrapped around his neck to try to strangle him.
Oh my God, the baby this time
the
too?
The baby, the 10-month-old baby. And he saw Brandy on the bed, face down. So he flipped her over and immediately knew she was dead because she was blue and a towel was wrapped around her neck. So he called 911 and performed CPR on his son, and the son ended up surviving.
Oh, thank God.
Yes, so the baby survived because the dad gave him CPR until help got there. So now,
at this point, my brain is just on overdrive right now. At this point, I'm sure Henry was on the short list of suspects.
Especially with finding his handprint.
And especially with finding his handprint. And they're, like, this is now in his apartment complex. So now you've got multiple people from his job.
And then two people from the same apartment complex, yeah.
So, and a handprint, like, hello, Charlotte police. You have to have him on your short list. You have to be looking into this guy right now.
And one of the really horrific things, when I was skimming through the court document, it said that he raped. So, a lot of the victims, he also sexually assaulted.
Oh, wow.
And he said that he raped Brandy while she was holding her baby. And then Brandy, I think, forgave him, said, I forgive you for what you've done. And that's when he killed her. So he Absolute fucking monster. So now that two murders within a day of each other happening in the same apartment complex, the police are like, something's not right. We're going to set up extra patrols in this area.
I would hope so.
But that still didn't stop him. That still did not stop him. Because Deborah Ann Slaughter, she also lived in the complex. And her mother discovered her body 2 days later on March 12th. She had been stabbed 38 times with towels strangled around her throat and a sock stuffed in her mouth.
Holy shit. This dude, like, to put it in a crass manner, just because I can't think of another way of putting this, but, like, have you not heard of don't shit where you eat? Like, don't kill people right where you live.
Or in the, like, do you want to get caught? I don't know if he lived in the complex, but, like, again, this is like, oh, here's a hub of people I'm going to kill. Here's a hub of people I'm going to kill.
But didn't you say Vernus was his neighbor or his friend?
His friend. So I don't know if he lived in the same apartment complex, but, like, he knew this is where Vernus lived, and then that's when he branched out to make the other killings. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. I just assumed that they were, like, neighbors, and that's why he knew his
schedule. I mean, they might have been. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the knife that he used to stab Deborah was actually belonged to her, and he cleaned it and left it in her purse.
In her purse.
In her purse. Because I think the way they described it, it was like, it also looked like a murder robbery. Okay. You know, her stuff was all over the place.
Right.
But Henry was arrested the next day, March 13th. The police got him. And he spent over 12 hours confessing in graphic detail all of the victims' physical appearances and how he had raped and killed them.
And, oh my God.
And the reason he confessed to Shonda Bethia's killing was because he knew her family.
And that was
the very first
girl. Right. Mm-hmm.
And I found some news articles here. Sheriff said that during their interview Monday, Wallace calmly ate a Snickers bar and drank a Coke as he gave detailed information about how he destroyed the evidence of Miss Bethia's death.
Go ahead.
That's when they officially charged him for the crimes, because he confessed to everything. And the news reached his mom and his sister, Lottie Mae, who was mentally and physically abusive.
Right.
She said, "It's like you're in a dream and you're eventually going to wake up. That's how it seems to me. You don't know what your children are doing, so what can you say?" So when this interview happened, Henry and his mom had two phone calls between the day he was charged and this interview, to the Associated Press. He said it was something that happened in his head and he couldn't explain it, Miss Wallace said. He said he hoped nobody thought I did a bad job raising him.
Is she literally just trying to fucking deflect attention from herself?
Yes! Right, he hurt me and I just don't want to see him right now, she said. I'd be afraid I'd say something I shouldn't say.
Ma'am, your son just killed hella women.
Because you gave him mommy issues.
Because you gave him mommy issues, and your first instinct is to be like, oh, well, he just wants to make sure that I'm not coming out bad in this.
Yeah.
No, he didn't, motherfucker. Oh, no, God. He didn't. Stop trying to save face. Your son is a murderer. Absolute monster. Fucking you monster. Raised it. You, oh my God.
So, the Charlotte police issued an apology for not, I think I copied this word for word from the article. So Charlotte police apologized for not spotting a link between the murders sooner. Police chief Jack Boger rejected accusations by some that the investigation was slow because all the victims were all working class blacks. If somebody could show me evidence of a pattern of discrimination, I'd certainly do something to fix that, Boger said. I don't believe it would have been any different if the victims had been 10 middle-class white women.
Shut the fuck up. Yes, it would have.
It
Shut the fuck up. Yes, it would have.
It would that's have been why so
Charlotte
different.
Is one that's why Charlotte is one of the most segregated cities in America to this day.
Literally.
Okay, Charlotte police officer, you're telling me that if Karen had gone missing from an affluent part of town,
Ten
Karens would have gone missing. Y'all wouldn't have been like on that shit like white on rice trying to figure out who the fuck did that?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Bullshit. I call
absolute bullshit too. Because I'm like getting really loud because I'm getting heated. I don't know what the primary method of strangulation is in killings, but the fact that it was a towel wrapped with something else, that's going to stand out.
Exactly.
That is that is going to stand out. Oh, that's weird. This other woman over here was raped with a towel and something mixed together. Oh,
yep.
This other lady over here was also strangled with a bath towel. Like, I was reading it, I'm like, the connections are so obvious.
They are. If they didn't want to see it, it's because they didn't want to. Because they didn't want to put their resources, time, and effort.
Exactly. Because it's just like, what was it? The bone collector. All these cases of missing prostitutes. The police were like, oh, they just ran away.
Or like the Atlanta Monster case.
Exactly. Oh, that made me so mad. Atlanta Monster.
That it was like literally months after kids had started going missing and showing up dead that the police even started investigating. Yes. Because the community members themselves had to start a task force to look for that, for what was happening.
I highly recommend listening to Atlanta Monster. It's a phenomenal podcast.
God.
It's like you're watching a movie. It's so good.
I think
good.
It's the very first true crime podcast that I ever listened to. And I was driving to Atlanta to see my dad from
Wilmington.
Yeah,
I think I told you to listen to it.
Yeah. So I was driving for about 8 hours and I'm pretty sure I got through all of the episodes just on that drive and I was hooked. 10 out of 10 recommend.
So good. So please listen to that because that is another case of the police exhibiting racial bias without wanting to admit it.
Because it's systemic.
It's absolutely systemic and nobody wants to acknowledge it because blue lives. Ugh. Anyway. Yes. Okay. Back to where I was on my notes. So also in this article, the police said it was difficult to follow his trail because they were kind of thrown off with stabbing, arson, and strangulation. There wasn't a clear pattern. There were connections, but not an actual pattern.
Right.
And even his family, like, they had no idea he was out here committing mass murder.
Right.
Like, they didn't even know that he was addicted to crack cocaine until a month before he was arrested.
Well, you know, that's not something I would necessarily be sharing with my family.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Mom, by the way, guess what I did last night? I broke and entered into somebody's house to steal some money for some crack cocaine, and then I went and killed a mother with the baby in her arms.
Aren't you proud of me, Mother?
Aren't you proud of me, Mother?
Aren't you proud, Mother? Yeah, like
I can't imagine that yeah, like how would they know?
Yeah.
How would they know?
So I guess that's just how out of touch they were with how he was, because I mean I don't know how far. I think Charlotte is about 3 hours from where he grew up. So without physically seeing him, they wouldn't know. But yeah, I mean, he was able to hide. Like, his family had no reason to suspect that anything was wrong. Kind of like how he did it with the Navy, where they had no reason to suspect that he had been committing breaking and entering crimes and all that.
Right. On surface level, he was quote unquote normal or
exactly.
An upstanding
like,
citizen.
Just the perfect sailor. I don't know. Do you call people in the Navy sailors? Is that how that works? I don't fucking know.
Sure. I don't know.
He
about
was a
the,
good
the military.
Sailor.
He was a good old sailor.
He was a good sailor. Horrible, shitty person.
Yeah.
So Robert Russler, an FBI profiler, He said in an interview with the Associated Press, Mr. Wallace always seemed to take one step forward and two steps back. He would take items and put them in the stove to destroy them by burning them and then forget to turn the stove on. So this was his testimony during the trial.
Our man's was stupid.
He was stupid. So it took a couple years after his confessions for the trial to actually start, because there were issues with jury selection. I guess there was a lot of bias when they were when they selected people for the jury pool. There was a lot of bias, so they couldn't have a know what I mean,
an unbiased jury.
Yes, took the words right out of my mouth. And apparently there were also issues with DNA testing, because this is also the 1990s. So
yeah, so it's still new.
It's still new, and working and smoothing things out. And then there were also issues with the choice of venue for the trial. So that's when I tried to look up what exactly happened with that. Like, you know, if they were going to charge him in Barnwell for the murder of his first victim, or in Charlotte, mm-hmm. because that's where most of them took place.
Most of them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, since he had literally confessed to everything, the whole premise of his defense was to give him life in prison, not the death penalty. So they had psychologist Faye Sultan testify, and she basically argued for the defense that Henry suffered from mental illness in combination with the abuse he suffered from his mother growing up. So he should get life in prison without parole, not the death penalty.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not what happened. He got the death penalty. He was found guilty on 9 counts of first degree murder. And on the court document that I'll post, there's a shit ton of other charges on there. Like, murder is literally just one part of it, because he was a fucking monster.
Holy shit. See, the death penalty is such a gray area for me.
Yeah, that's how I feel. Because when you have cases like this, you're like, this fucker deserves to die. But, you know, the system is flawed, because many innocent people have been executed. So
right.
When we say this fucker needs to die, it's because he is a monster.
Garbage.
That deserves to die.
He is a walking dumpster fire.
In reforming the criminal justice system, because many innocent people have suffered from it.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, they found him guilty on 9 counts of murder. And he told, you know, because they like, oh, would you like to make a statement to the court? Blah, blah, blah. He said, none of these women, none of your daughters, mothers, sister, or family members in any way deserved what they got. They did nothing to me that warranted their death. And then.
Oh, really?
Really?
Really, Henry?
Henry said that.
Oh, wow. Henry, I'm probably so glad he's that. Really reflecting on he's his actions.
So reflective on his actions. So what was it? Yeah, January 7th, he was found guilty. January 29th, he was given the death penalty. So he is currently in Central Prison in Raleigh. And he has been given appeals. And so those appeals have continuously been denied. And basically their main... the issues that are filed on the appeal are not because he's innocent, because he literally confessed to everything. They're trying to get him an appeal based on technical problems that happened.
Right.
So his legal team was like, he confessed involuntarily. He wasn't told his Miranda rights in a timely manner. Charlotte was too prejudiced to hold the trial, so he should get a new trial in a less prejudiced area.
Mm-hmm.
But the North Carolina Supreme Court, they're like, no, he received a fair trial. This is a legal invalid verdict. We're denying your appeal. So I think he still has some left. I don't know, but they've been shot down.
Good. And what year was it that he was given the death penalty?
1997.
So he's still waiting. He's still on death row today. Like, he hasn't.
23 years later. Yeah.
Oof.
Yep. And while he was in prison, he married a former nurse for the facility. So
what?
Yeah.
Ma'am.
So ma'am. June 5th, 1998, he married a former nurse for the facility, Rebecca Torrijas, I think is how you say it. Torrijas?
How's it spelled?
T-O-R-R-I-J-A-S.
Torrijas, yeah. That's, Torrijas? Yeah.
Yeah, I can't roll my R's. I sound like I'm drowning. That's fine. So, yeah,
I think Rebecca. You did great. I think you did great.
Thank you. So, she had worked with the psychiatric patients of the prison, and that is how she met Wallace after his arrest in 1994.
Could this man be so charming that he got a nurse at the prison facility who knows what crimes he's in there for to fall for him and yes. marry him?
Yes. Because after she met this fucker, she quit her job and would visit him once a week.
Motherfuckers be crazy. Crazy.
And would you like to know where they got married?
No, I really don't.
I think you're going to want to know. They got married next to the execution chamber.
I just don't even have words right now.
They got this married.
Is so fucked.
In a room next to the execution chamber. They got to talk for 20 minutes after the ceremony, a lovely reception. Then they were separated by glass and spoke again for another hour.
Wow.
The wow. groom was 33 years old and the bride was 56. Mommy issues.
Mommy issues.
Mommy issues.
And what are her issues? Because she clearly has some of her own that she needs to go seek therapy for because, yeah. girl.
Yeah. And that is the story of the Taco Bell strangler currently sitting on death row in Central Prison.
And so they're still married. So she's got to be like 70.
Yeah, 22 years later. Almost 80. So yeah, he would be in his mid-50s and she would be almost 80 if I'm doing my math right, because we can't do math on this show.
Oh my God, we can't do math. I'm so upset about it. No, but what? I'm just every turn of this case has been a wild
has. And sharp that's why I wanted turn. To kind of release the episode later so that I could be sure that my wild information was accurate.
And yeah,
but one of the real kickers.
Come visit Charlotte.
Yeah. One of the kickers to this case is that Tashonda, like, there was another victim before her.
Right. Yeah.
Like, he murdered a prostitute before killing her. If I'm remembering that right, I don't know why I didn't write it down.
He just wasn't charged. It might have been because
I only found one report saying that he had murdered this prostitute, and it was one mm-hmm. like, but I mean, he confessed to 10 killings, but there's definitely 11 and maybe even more than that.
And Catherine rests her case.
I
Holy
rest
shit.
My case. Yes. So when I get to posting the North Carolina Supreme Court document, if you want to look it up for yourself, because you're like, holy shit, I gotta read what this fucking terrible person has done, if you go to case law find law, or really you can just type in North Carolina Supreme Court State v. Wallace, and you will find it on their website. And it's basically the Supreme Court. Well, it describes everything that he confessed to, and then it's an analysis from the Supreme Court about why they're like, no,
he's
you received
denying
a
the
fair
appeals.
Trial.
Yeah, why they're denying. Yeah, wow. What a case.
What a case.
Right in our own backyard.
Exactly. And I didn't even know about this case until it was when I had my internship downtown. And because we were kind of connected to the jail downtown, mm-hmm. but not really. So we had like security guards who, like, you know, we had our little keys we could get in. But one of the security guards talked about this case, and she was like, "Oh yeah, the Taco Bell strangler." And I was like, "What?
Come again? You tell me more, interest, young madam."
Yes. She was like, "Oh yeah." So that's how I discovered this case, and I was like, "Oh my god, this is like the perfect case."
Shout out to her.
I don't remember what her name is because we were never formally introduced, but. Shout out to her.
Damn. Good case. Good case.
Very good case.
Good comeback from our lovely vacations. Yes. So now it's time for the ABCs of crime.
It is. Oh, hold on. Let me, because I actually came up with one. Because, hold on.
This is not a drill. Catherine came up with and ABCs of crime beforehand, yes. Instead of us just winging it on the spot. Because normally
we kind
of
come up with it in the moment, and then, like, Julie's the one that says it. Oh, gosh. No.
I have a special brain.
Normally we kind of just, like, pause it, and we're like, okay, wait, what do you want to talk about? And then I'll be like, oh, maybe we should do this. And then she gives a suggestion, and we're like, okay, we like that one. Let's go with that one. But today's episode has been brought to you by the letter P for potatoes. Because Taco Bell needs to bring back the potatoes.
Yes. Yes.
Bring back the potatoes.
Listen, Taco Bell, I'm not threatening you. But if you don't bring back the cheesy fiesta potatoes and the nacho fries and the Chipotle chicken loaded grillers, I don't know what I'm gonna do, but I'm gonna cause havoc. I'm gonna lose it. Yes, I'm trash. Yes, I like Taco Bell. Yes, Taco Bell needs to bring back the potatoes. I hope you all agree here.
Yes. So, one like, one follow, one subscription is one prayer for getting the Taco Bell potatoes back.
Yes. Oh, excellent. Excellent. Snaps. Yes. Snaps for Catherine her marvelous ABCs of crime contribution this week.
Yes.
Well, thank you guys for tuning in another week.
Yes.
We hope that 2020 ends on a high note, high-ish, higher note than the rest of the year.
But we know 2021 is going to be bomb because Julie will be hosting the first episode of the new year.
And I'm hoping this one, the next one, is a bit of a change from the last few that I've done that have been just like super dark and torture filled. This morbid. One's going to be, dare I say, even a little comedic.
Oh.
So.
Really?
Yes, a little comedic. So stay tuned for that. I'm excited for you guys to listen to it.
I'm excited to hear it.
Yes, and all that's left for us to say now is good night, friends.